Before I begin, I'm going to warn you that there will be spoilers. If you haven't seen 2016's The Barn, I recommend that you do so and come back. It is available to stream on Amazon and worth the watch. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Bad Movie Bunny podcast, where horror and thrillers are reviewed, but is the next scream that you hear your own. My name is Lisa, or the Bad Movie Bunny, and we are going to explore the haunted hayride that is The Barn, written and directed by Justin M. Seaman, and starring Mitchell Mussolino, Will Stout, and Lexi Drip, while we ask the burning question, are three monsters dwelling in one barn scary, or the best sitcom never pitched? Let's get into it. It's Halloween in 1989, and all two friends Juan is one last prank before they finish their final year of high school. They corral a few friends and head to a concert only to take a wrong turn toward an old barn with three murderous monsters. We kick this movie off in the small town of Weary Falls in 1959. People are heading inside a church on Devil's Night. The costumed kids sitting in the pews want nothing more than a wholesome religious service. Oh, sure. They want to get candy from neighbors and possibly other treats at the Harvest Hootenanny. These were the priest's words, not mine. He then warns of Weary Farms being off limits, and all the children heed his words. No, I couldn't even say that with a straight face. A boy and girl that have been exchanging secretive glances throughout this announcement ignore it completely and go to the barn anyway, the girl egging on her friend. Now, by her logic, every building that has a jack-o'-lantern gives out candy. There is a jack-o'-lantern at the barn, so this means special candy, right? Knocking on the door and saying trick-or-treat, she gets a gory surprise that did not involve a Snickers bar. Cut to 1989. Pun intended. In a town called Helen's Valley, friend Sam, played by Mitchell Mussolino, and Josh, played by Will Stout, have set up a makeshift haunted house where Sam recounts the legend of the Weary Farms barn, introducing the three monsters within. The Boogeyman, a miner who cracks backs, yet somehow did not parlay this into a themed medical practice. Hollow Jack, a slashing pumpkin head, and the candy corn scarecrow, who eats eyes. He recites a poem and hands out candy, unless you aren't in costume. That snide and hapless kid is then directed to a mystery barrel, where a masked Josh jumps out and scares the kid away without so much as a box of raisins. And tell me you didn't get at least one trick-or-treating as a kid. Now, not everyone is too happy about their setup. And this includes Josh, who questions Sam Halloween's rules and methods. But their most notable opponent is Ms. Barnhart, played by Linnea Quigley, who does not like kids being scared, really doesn't care for Sam splitting hairs over Devil's Night as opposed to Halloween, and is especially pissed off when asked to help clean up this haunted display, only to get scared by Josh in a barrel. In short, Sam should act his age, and Josh, the son of a pastor, should know better. Ms. Barnhart, who's been running the church since his father's death, is now on a mission to ban Halloween, starting with calling Sam's father and imposing a sentence involving the donation of canned goods before indefinite grounding. This doesn't deter Sam's fun as he leads Josh to the town roller rink to check up on his buddy Russell, to plot one last Halloween prank, and to bother his crush Michelle, played by Lexi Drips. After they watch a schlocky music news show hosted by Dr. Rock, played by Ari Lehman, who plays up his role in the funniest way, Sam plots a way to fulfill his community service by way of candy, as we must prank Ms. Barnhart, as opposed to a few canned goods, and to go see Demon Inferno for their midnight concert. They find a few more pals, notably Chris and Nikki, a couple with a van that could take them to that concert. As nothing says 1980s devil-worshipping panic like a heavy metal concert in a small town. Our cannon fodder, our Scooby Gang, is assembled. They drive themselves to a town called Deathville, according to the dilapidated sign. But it's Weary Falls. It wasn't run down due to the highways coming in, as Michelle guessed. Sure, the town seems abandoned, but our Scooby gang reaches an imposing and suspiciously abandoned bar, only to set up campfire and play truth or dare. I'm not kidding. Sam recounts more Halloween lore as the group talks about pranks and forget about the community service still imposed. Sam talked about how his grandfather would tell him about the boogeyman, Hollow Jack, and the scarecrow when he was a kid. It turned out that his grandfather was a teenager working in the town mines during the 1930s, and an accident made one miner the monster he is today. His demonic roommates didn't get too much of a backstory, but all the same, Sam is dared to knock on the barn door to trick-or-treat. And not only does Sam do it, the rest of the group goes with him. Our trio of monsters don't pop out with weapons in hand to nail the town's king of Halloween pranksters. Not yet, anyway. But they start to stir under the floor, and the locked barn opens magically for people to explore. Thus begins the jump scares and the pranks. Russell hides to scare his friends. Chris and Nikki head to the cornfield for, quality time. Sam, Josh, and Michelle separate from Russell, who is now on his own and exploring dead and rotting flesh in jars, until he finds a head. The footsteps he hears were not Sam's. A few choice 80s slang terms are uttered before he gets a pickaxe to the head. Chris leads a blindfolded Nikki to a clearing. A scarecrow watches them get together. Josh, Sam, and Michelle head to Weary Falls proper. They are in costume with bags of fun in hand as a man smashes up a pumpkin. They trick-or-treat as Chris and Nikki hear a noise they assume to be Russell. Chris goes off to look for him, and Nikki finds herself in the company of an arm-choppy scarecrow and a guy in shadow. Chris goes back to the barn, sees the man working inside isn't Russell, but his head is in his bag of parts as a demon miner chomps on some organs to chase Chris into that cornfield, letting him find Nikki's body. It's then that our monsters meet as a trio and pursue him through the cornfield into town, where he looks for Sam, Michelle, and Josh, who encounter Sam's demons, who in addition to grisly murder, steal Sam's candy and take a pickaxe to the nice woman offering apples. Enter the party at the schoolhouse, the Harvest Hootenanny. There is a live band, and for a tame town event, this was fairly well attended, probably for the band and later for cannon fodder factor. Sam finds the pumpkin smasher, who is named George, and he seems drunk while he's talking about demons. Demons that are familiar to Sam. George knows them too well, as he escaped the barn in 1959 as a kid. He watched his friend take a pickaxe to the head, courtesy of the boogeyman, who digs a tunnel from hell to earth. Hollow Jack uses jack-o'-lanterns as eyes, and the scarecrow protects the harvest, not by a lot. George wasn't believed as a kid or an adult, and Sam identifies with this. Our monsters, on the other hand, don't hang around to trick-or-treat. They head over to the schoolhouse and the party within. By this point, Chris figures out that everyone is at the schoolhouse and tries to find his friends before the demons start hacking their way through the party in a bloody mess, starting with the band. Chaos ensues when people realize that the exits are locked. Sam puts his mask on and confronts the boogeyman, who he still believes to be a human candy thief, but gets knocked down pretty painfully. By then, it is a full-on demon buffet as people scramble for a way out, and I'd hate to be the cleaning company for that schoolhouse. Before George dies, he tells them that the barn is where to end the curse. Everyone heads back there, and Sam and Josh opt to separate the demons and harm them on their own given territory. Now, I can't help but like the same trick that horror villains use to take out large groups of people by separating them, turned on its ear to be used on the monsters. All the same, Sam and Josh find Chris's head hollowed out by like a jack-o'-lantern before fighting Hollow Jack by way of smashing all the pumpkins in the patch. Each monster is fought using the rules of legends, such as a trick if not given a treat, and power tools for that extra flair. Those highways might have affected the smaller townships, but no one was complaining about that escape route. I recommended this movie to a friend, and when asked what I liked best about it, I had to answer that I couldn't resist the creatures. There's something about creepy-looking monsters. There's allegory of the other, something different from us being scary, but I like to knit and create weird characters. I made felt Frankenbunnies to start a blog years ago and never looked back. Sometimes monsters make the movie, and our trio of barn horrors hacked and lacerated their way through this fun love letter to 80s horror movies. I really enjoyed Linnea Quigley's performance of the church-going conservative who sets it all in motion. I just wish she had more screen time. The lead actors, while a little too earnest in their performances, Mitchell Mussolino especially, nevertheless fought well into the end credits and went out like heroes, as 80s horror movies need the final girl. If there was any criticism that I had, it was that the movie jumped from story to story, losing focus while being a little formulaic. That the story began in 1959, jumping to 1989, reminded me a little of Halloween and Friday the 13th, both of which became popular franchises in the 1980s. Given that Seaman wanted to achieve the atmosphere of 80s horror movies, including minimal use of handheld cameras, it isn't surprising that some of the genre's tropes made an appearance. And they laid it on thick with slang terms that were emphasized to really let you know what decade this was. Barbarama and bitchin' were few of the overused phrases. Speaking of tropes, Seaman's script had the feel of the 80s horror movie. If you go up to the old barn that you were told to avoid by your priest, you end up with a demonic curse tearing up your town and party. If you had sex near the cursed cornfield, the creepy scarecrow and his buddies walk in on you in the worst way. Not that you were paying attention or anything. And what slasher of the period isn't complete where the heroes confront the monsters and find the posed corpses of their friends? Be it one as a jack-o'-lantern or an impaled and armless scarecrow. Early in the movie, Michelle is established as the final girl when Nikki asks Chris if he believed her quote-unquote virgin act. Chris responded that she was indeed a quote-unquote good girl in a way that suggested that she probably turned him down in the past, maybe more than a few times. Michelle was later offered as a treat to the devil in the form of virgin sacrifice, but she escapes in the van as the last one standing. Well, until the intact jack-o'-lantern starts to sparkle in the back seat. And what is a horror movie without a scary score? The soundtrack was composed by Rocky Gray, who was the former drummer of Evanescence and has composed the film scores for 1031 and Cryptids. In keeping with the decade, Linaris Records released the soundtrack on vinyl and on cassette. And I've noticed that cassettes are making something of a comeback, as I would see them at shows over the past few years. And now, to answer the burning question. Is a trio of cursed monsters scary or a great sitcom? You have the zombie miner, a scarecrow, and a pumpkin head. All three live in a barn with an adjacent cornfield. Now, two of our bosom buddies are the kind of creatures one might see at a farm, but a miner who digs tunnels to hell? One could see the boogeyman as a bit of a wild card as these three demons try to chop up humans for the devil and make a living in this workaday small town. Okay, it's a Halloween trope, but they can have wacky roommate adventures when it isn't in season. Could Satan come over for an unexpected dinner in a scenario where the boss calls up out of the blue? Just what or who will they cook up to get that promotion, and what could go wrong when that gathering of unsuspecting partygoers decide to stay home instead? Gory wackiness ensues. This movie was an homage to 80s horror. Why not an homage to 80s sitcoms? Thus ends this episode of the Bad Movie Bunny podcast. If you want to find more content, you can visit my blog at www.badmoviebunnies.com or follow me on Twitch as Bad Movie Bunnies. Who knows? I may pop on for a video game live stream. Until then, thank you for listening, and tune in next time. But before I bounce, here's a few words from the Prescribed Films Podcast Network. Thanks again, and check them out.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal: providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.